The last couple of weeks I've shared with you that I've been reading the book of Proverbs, and it's been my area of devotion each day. I'm reading the proverb of whatever day that is. Today's the 17th, so I read Proverbs 17, and along with my other reading, but it's something I'm doing and encouraged you to do, and some of you are doing that as well as a practice, and I've asked the Lord to help me do this throughout the year, just to keep reading the book of Proverbs, because there's wisdom in there. Jesus himself said that there was none wiser than Solomon. No, he said something greater than Solomon had come on himself, but he acknowledged that was indeed the wisest man who had lived up until that time, and Solomon had been given specific wisdom that we can apply to our lives. And so, last week we talked about diligence, how the book of Proverbs spoke about diligence, and I guess what I'm going to be doing on Wednesday nights for just a little bit is just doing a little series out of the book of Proverbs. So last week we called it Proverbs on Diligence. And tonight I want to call it Proverbs on Communication. Because communication is a very important issue of our lives, and it's an area that is it is spoken of frequently in the book of Proverbs. Ineffective communication is often cited as the number one problem in any kind of relationship breakdown, whether it's a marriage relationship, a work relationship, a friendship relationship. You all know that oftentimes the reason that relationships deteriorate is because of poor or ineffective communication. And communication can also be very destructive. I mean, sometimes what you say can be hurtful, but sometimes what you don't say can be hurtful. I'm reminded of that commercial. In fact, I had saved the link on my computer. I was going to get Faith to play it for you tonight, but I'll just have to reference it because I didn't give her the link. But there's a commercial for a cell phone company that talks about how this guy's calling his girlfriend up. He's at his house and she's at her house and she's cleaning the kitchen or whatever. And he's like, "Hey, baby, how you doing?" And she's like, "I'm fine, baby, how are you?" And he's like, "I just love you so. Oh, I love you too. I'm so glad I'm the only man in your life." And right about then, you know, she goes, and so he's like, I'm the only man in your life, right? And she's still talking. And finally he's like, "Is there somebody else? I mean, is it Harold? What's the matter? Talk to me. Cat got your tongue? Harold got your tongue?" I should have added that last part. But the point was that ineffective communication or poor communication can really create problems. And so Solomon really helps us in understanding. It gives us a lot of information in the book of Proverbs about the issue of communication. So I want to look at what the book of Proverbs has to say. What we're going to do, first we're going to cover what I would consider to be four proverbial truths, or four truths from Proverbs. And there's a lot more, and I had to really cull out and throw out and delete some things. But here are four truths, and if you want to write these down, these will help you. And teenagers, these will help you in your friendships and your relationships. Married couples, these will help you in your relationships with your spouses. Employees and employers, these will help you in your relationships with your employer, employees, and unemployed people. Write them down anyway. I'm just kidding. These are four proverbial truths that are going to help you in relationships when it comes to communication. Number one, it's found in Proverbs chapter 15, verse number 1, and it says, Proverbs 15:1 says, "A gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger." And here's the truth: your communication can extinguish anger or escalate it. You need to write that down. You need to understand this is a proverbial truth. This is wisdom for your life. Your communication, your answer, your response can either extinguish anger or escalate it. It is the natural inclination of all of us, or the natural reaction, to follow the path of least resistance. And many times, people who have anger, which is a lot of people, will allow their anger to spin out of control in a situation. And it's just easier whenever whatever situation comes up, and maybe the other person is confrontational, or the other person is angry, and the other person is got a harsh word or a loud communication. It's really the most natural thing to say, "Oh yeah? right back at you. But the wisdom that we're trying to see here and the wisdom that we're learning is that we have a choice in how we respond. And we can choose to respond in kind, or we can choose to extinguish the anger. If we will use soft answers, here it says a gentle answer. But I think the King James says a soft word or a soft answer. When that situation arises in our life, someone brings up an issue, or someone brings up a confrontation, or someone brings up a problem, this is very important. You have a choice in how to respond. I have a choice in how to respond. And so, are we going to continue the harshness? You might think, well, they're being harsh with me, or they're being angry with me. Well, you can, and you're going to prove this proverb to be true. No matter how you react, you're going to prove this proverb to be true. Because if you react harshly, the anger is going to flare up. If you react calmly and quietly and gently, then you're going to find healing being brought to the situation. So, this is the first truth when it comes to anger, and or when it comes to communication. It works in all kinds of situations. Obviously, if the other person is especially angry, you may have to be a little more gentle for a little bit longer. And you do have to be careful. I just want to caution you in this. If the other person feel like you've done something really offensive, or they feel like you've done something, they're very, very angry, you got to be careful that your soft answer doesn't appear to be condescending or patronizing. You don't want to, well, I understand why you feel that way. That's not the kind of soft, gentle answer it's talking about. You might think, well, see, I'm going to do what Brother Nathan said. I'm going to say, well, I understand you. You just haven't arrived yet. No, don't use that kind of soft answer. But this is a proverbial truth that you and I can apply to our lives. When an angry situation comes up, the wisest man on the earth says that a gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. Now let's talk about another truth, a proverbial truth, a proverb that is so true, and that is that your communication can wound others or can heal them. Your communication can wound others or can heal them. All four of these I'm going to tell you begin with the words, your communication. So if you want to write your notes in advance, feel free to do so. Your communication can wound others or can heal them. Look at Proverbs chapter number 12, verse number 18. Solomon writes, "There is one who speaks rashly like the thrusts of a sword, but the tongue of the wise brings healing." I don't know how many times you may have seen a parent speak to their child in those cutting, harsh, mean ways. They're in public. Maybe they've lost control of the situation, and for whatever reason, they're not responding to their child by thinking about what they're saying, and they're just throwing words. Shut up! Sit down! Don't be stupid! How many times I gotta tell you? You're such an idiot! And what's happening is their words are slicing and cutting and dicing and thrusting like swords into the heart of that child. This is what the Scripture is telling us, that our words can wound others. There is one who speaks rashly like the thrusts of a sword, or our words can bring healing. Sometimes the cuts are very subtle. And sometimes, I said to you a minute ago, it's not always just what you say. Sometimes it's how you say it. Sometimes the tone of voice or the implication is a very subtle wounding. And sometimes the words come at full bore, as if we'd taken both hands and taken that sword, broadsword, and cut them. But nevertheless, we have to understand that it's not just words. People sometimes feel like, they just say, well, they're only words, but they scar for life. If I were to ask you, how many of you remember a cutting word that someone said to you a long time ago? If any of you could remember something that was said to you, let's go back and say over 50% of your life ago, whatever age you are, take that number and cut in half and say, that many years ago, if you're 40, can you remember something mean that someone said to you 20 years ago? If you're 16, can you remember something mean someone said to you 8 years ago? I guarantee you, most of us can remember something that somebody said. It may have been a coach. It may have been a teacher. It may have been a parent. It may have been a sibling. I remember a mean thing my brother said to me one time. I remember lots of mean things. He probably remembers a few mean things I said about him. One time I was playing bass guitar and singing with a fella here in town, and myself and another guy were going along with this singer at the Alexandria Zoo, and he was singing that afternoon. We had worked on our music, and I was up there playing my bass guitar, and I was singing with him. My brother had gone with me for whatever purpose that day. And when the day was over, you know, I felt pretty good. We had a good little crowd gathered. People seemed to enjoy the music, and we're loading our instruments up. And I said, my brother, what'd you think? And he looked at me and he said, were you harmonizing with him or mocking him? Were you harmonizing with him or mocking him? Now, that was about 23 years ago, more than half my age. But I still remember it because it was one of those words that cut. Now, I laughed about it because I think he was picking. But you've heard the old phrase, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words cut even more deeply. And so you need to know that your communication can wound or can heal. I want you to look at a couple other verses on this. Proverbs 16, you need to realize, you know, some people think, well, I'm just going to tell the truth and let the chips fall where they may. I'm just going to tell the truth, and if the truth hurts, then tough. Well, there's a way to tell the truth. Proverbs chapter 16, verse 24 says, pleasant words are a honeycomb, sweet to the soul and healing to the bones. You can use your words to heal. And then chapter number 12 of the same book, obviously. We're going to be in Proverbs all night tonight. Chapter 12, verse number 25 says, anxiety in a man's heart weighs it down, but a good word makes it glad. Do you see how words can heal people? It's obvious how words can hurt people. But it says that words can be like sweet honeycomb that brings healing to your bones. It says here that a good word makes a man's heart glad. I have read, and I can't give you the citation, but I've read that there have been studies done in the medical field that show that people who have poor relationships, they're filled with anger and resentment, their bodies don't heal as fast. And people who have good relationships and wholesomeness find that their bodies heal faster than others. I could probably find that for you if I could look up the references. But I'm going to tell you something. Your words can bring healing to people, or your words can hurt. So that's the second proverbial truth. The third one is that your communication can infuse life into someone else's spirit. Your communication can infuse life. In Proverbs chapter number 15, in verse number 4, just the first half of that says, the tongue of the wise, I'm sorry, verse 4, a soothing tongue is a tree of life. Now, I'm totally staying away from the verse that says life and death is in the power of the tongue, because we all know that one so well. But look at what this verse says. It says, a soothing tongue is a tree of life. Now, think about a tree for a minute. A tree is not only alive, but it gives life. How does a tree give life? Well, one thing is through that whole process where it takes in the carbon dioxide and turns it into oxygen. Is that right, high school students? Is that what it does? Yeah, okay. See, those green leaves can take in carbon dioxide? And John, you know this stuff. Is it carbon dioxide or carbon monoxide or carbon dioxide or thank you very much. And so we live because those trees give life, right? They're not just alive, but they give life. Not only do we live from the oxygen that a tree gives, we live from the fruit of a tree. I mean, how many of you guys like apples and oranges, pomegranates, figs, bananas? Yeah. We eat the fruit of the tree. I mean, trees give life in other ways. Their roots go down into the soil. And they provide stability to the soil and keep it from eroding and washing away. There's so many ways that trees not only live, but give life. And the Word says here that a soothing tongue is a tree of life that other people live from. Other people take healing from. Other people take life from the words that we say when we say, when we communicate in good ways. The reverse is also true. The second half of the verse says, but perversion in it crushes the spirit. Now, perversion, the word perversion literally means divisiveness, distortion and viciousness. If you look up your dictionary, your Greek dictionary, Hebrew dictionary, that word is going to tell you distortion and viciousness. And when we speak in ways that distort the truth, or when we speak in ways that are vicious towards people, you can be sure that their spirit is being crushed. There are people who will tell you, who've been in abusive relationships, that verbal abuse is much, 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 much more damaging than physical abuse. I'm not advocating either kind of abuse. But physical abuse, you know, the cut will heal, the bruise will eventually fade, but the emotional scarring that comes from destructive, distorted, vicious words crushes the spirit, breaks the spirit. And so here's my point. Throughout our life, we have the opportunity to either infuse life or death. We have the opportunity to bring life to others with the words that we speak, and we need to seek to be those kinds of people that foster healing and health, not inflicting pain. So far we've said that your communication can extinguish anger or escalate it. We've said that your communication can wound others or can heal them. We've said that your communication can infuse life into someone else's spirit. The fourth thing I want to tell you is that your communication can bring the light to others. In Proverbs chapter number 25, it's a beautiful verse. Brother Buddy had it for many years in the Gems for Jesus. It was written on each page of the Gems for Jesus Workman's Diary. Proverbs chapter 25, verse 11 says, like apples of gold in settings of silver is a word spoken in right circumstances. Apples of gold and settings of silver. As I think about that and reflect on that, I wonder if Solomon didn't perhaps have in mind a particular work of art from his palace. I mean, he was a very wealthy man. He was the richest man on the earth. He collected artifacts and treasures from around the globe. And he had received in his palaces and was able to collect just fortunes. And I'm sure he had many magnificent pieces of art. And perhaps he's thinking of a specific artwork, whether it was a drawing that had a frame around it that had apples of gold and settings of silver, or whether it was a particular ornamental thing that had this design or just a drawing of it. I'm not sure how much 3D stuff they had because they weren't supposed to make graven images. But he had to have seen something, maybe a particular piece of jewelry, a necklace he had given to someone that he loved, or an earring that he had given to one of his special wives, one of his 300 wives and 600 concubines, or maybe it was something, a ring he had given to a son that he loved, a beautiful piece of jewelry or art. And as he thought about that, he said, you know, as the happiness that brings somebody can't compare to the kind of word that's spoken in the right circumstance that fits the need. And so my point is that our communication can bring delight to others. We look at art, and one of the things that's so beautiful about art is it takes us out of ourselves. It lifts us away from who we are. It communicates things to us. It allows us to get our eyes off of who we are and off of our self-centeredness and maybe off of our own pain. And it lifts us up to see something beautiful and we get captivated by it. I think I've shared with you a piece of artwork I saw one day that was absolutely gorgeous. Now, I'm not an artist. I'm not one of these gallery hangers-on that goes to galleries and openings and that kind of stuff. But every now and then I'll see a piece of art that will just captivate my spirit. And I saw a piece of artwork one day. A pastor, a local pastor who's an artist, had taken two different paintings that were the same. He had painted two paintings of the same thing. And then he had taken those paintings and ripped them. And as he ripped those paintings lengthwise, and then he ripped the other one crosswise, he took them and wove them together. And you had this incredible tapestry with different colors, and edges were a little bit rough, and you know, not everything was perfect, but it was gorgeous. And it spoke to me about how God weaves our lives and takes the broken pieces and weaves all the things that, whether they're successes or failures, and He makes it beautiful. He makes it a new creation. And it spoke to me, and oh, how I wanted that picture. I wanted that drawing because it spoke to my heart. And I'm thinking that perhaps Solomon is referencing how something about that, those apples of gold, those golden apples in those settings of silver, somehow spoke to him of something precious and beautiful and life-giving. And he said, as beautiful as that is and how it ministers to my soul and lifts me out of myself, so do our words minister to other people and give life and bring joy and delightfulness when we say the right word at the right time. Have you ever said just the right thing at the right time? We've all said the wrong thing at the wrong time, haven't we? But every now and then we'll say the right thing at the right time. And there's such a sense of thank you, Lord, for allowing me to say that, to be that help, to do that for that person. Guys, these truths, you can take them and use them to your advantage. You need to understand that communication is powerful. And the Lord has given us truth in His words on how our communication, like I said, either with bosses or with spouses or with co-workers or whatever it is, God's given you some truths about communication. Number one, you can either put gas on the fire with your words or you can put water on the fire with your words. Number two, you can hurt them or you can heal them. Number three, you can give life to others. And number four, you can be a delight to others. Now, what I'd like to do is wrap it up by just sharing with you seven keys to communication that I've seen. These are truths, but this next thing I'm going to share with you are keys. These are actual steps you can take to be a better communicator, to better fulfill these truths about what communication is. And for lack of a better phrase, I'll call these Solomon's keys to communication. The first one is this. This is important. Are you writing it down? Are you ready? She hadn't put it up there yet, has she? This is good. Are you sure you're ready for this? Okay. This is going to change your world, communication. Listen before speaking. You hear me? Listen. Proverbs chapter number 18, verse number 13 says, he who gives an answer before he hears, it is folly and shame to him. Whenever we begin to answer someone before they finish making their point, we're just foolish. Not to mention rude, but Solomon says it's foolishness to speak before the other person has finished speaking. Sadly, when we do that, many times we jump to the wrong conclusion. We think they're going to say one thing and we start supplying or we start answering what they think. And this is in marriage, I've seen this, and Lori and I have seen this. Sometimes we're fighting straw castles or air castles. I think that her point is all about this. So I build this huge argument against whatever it is I think she's upset about or frustrated with. And all I'm doing is I'm making her argument. I'm trying to say, this is what you're upset about. And she'll say, that's not what I'm upset about. Oh, yes, it is. But you said, But that's not what bothered me. Well, yes, it is, because you said such and such and such and such. And so what has helped us a lot of times is say, what did you understand? Or this is what I heard. But so many times we start speaking before we listen. And Solomon says, he who gives an answer before he hears is foolish. So let's just let people finish. Listen to them. The second one is this. Speak in such a way that you make others want to listen. When you've gotten through listening and it's your time to speak, speak in such a way that you make them want to speak. Now, I get this from Proverbs chapter 15, verse number 2. And it says, the tongue of the wise makes knowledge acceptable. You see that? The tongue of the wise makes knowledge acceptable, but the mouth of fools spouts folly. A lot of people say what they think. No, that's not true. A lot of people say without thinking. And their words out of their mouth are like a stream of consciousness. It's just what comes in comes out. And whatever they think or whatever they feel is what they say and what they speak. And it's a flow of whatever, and it ends up being something that's not what it started out being, or it could be whatever. Sometimes we say what we think or we feel while we're thinking it and feeling it. But you know, sometimes you need to think about something before you say something about it. And sometimes you need to realize that your feelings shouldn't necessarily dictate your speaking. And so it says here that we need to make, for the tongue of the wise makes knowledge acceptable. This is a secret we need to learn. There is a way to say something to people. Now, we can just blurt it out. We could just say it. Or we could ask the Lord for wisdom. Lord, how can I share this in a way that they will understand? How can I, you know what? Wise wives understand. My wife understands. There are times that she doesn't need to share something with me because I'm going to say no or I'm going to react. If I'm physically tired, if I am exhausted or whatever, she knows that she needs, you know, she uses wisdom in sharing it. Sometimes she'll come to me and she'll say, I'm a little hesitant to tell you this because I'm afraid of how you might respond. And that little phrase that she just said to me tells me I need to be careful how I respond. You see, the Lord gave her wisdom in how to make knowledge acceptable. And so as we're wanting to communicate to others, we need to do whatever it takes to make what we have to say easy to swallow, acceptable. The third truth is this, in Proverbs 16, third key is that we need to learn to become persuasive. Proverbs chapter 16, verse number 23, says, the heart of the wise instructs his mouth and adds persuasiveness to his lips. And this is key. I want you to look at this first part of the first half of that. The heart of the wise instructs his mouth. There are some people whose mouth hadn't been connected to their brain in a long time. Thank you for chuckling at that. There are some people whose mouth has not been instructed by their heart. But a wise person instructs his mouth. Now, the word instructs is a very complex Hebrew word. In the Old Testament, it's translated probably 20 or 30 different ways, because it's such a complex word. But essentially, it talks about having thoughtfulness, having premeditation, having decided. And so the heart of a wise person tells the mouth to be thoughtful, to think about it before you utter it. And this is a key. We shouldn't talk every time we feel like talking. We need to learn how to take control of what we say. And when we do that, when we learn when to speak and when not to speak, which is obviously easier for some than others, when we do that, it makes us become more persuasive. You remember the old commercial? My broker is E.F. Hutton. And E.F. Hutton says, and the entire place would get quiet. Y'all remember that old commercial? Was it the E.F. Hutton? Why? Because the kind of premise was you don't talk much, and when you talk, you need to listen. Well, if we can be those kind of wise people, we become persuasiveness. And listen, an obvious benefit of speaking less is that you hear more. Brother Buddy often said about quiet people that when people who don't talk much, they know what they know and they know what you know too. Because I'm going to say what I know. I'm going to put it out there and everybody's going to know. Let me tell you what I think, as if I had the last answer for anything. Okay, but the second half of the verse tells us, we're in verse 23, the heart of the wise instructs his mouth and adds persuasiveness to his lips. Now look, this is not manipulation. Manipulation uses any means possible, including deceit, whatever it takes, to convince somebody to do something that may not be in their best interest. That's manipulation. But persuasiveness allows you to present your point of view in a clear way, in a compelling way, in such a way that to the person that you believe that what you're talking about really is in their best interest. You are convinced that it's in their best interest, and so you're able to communicate in such a way, or it's for the common good, and you're able to communicate in such a way that it's clear and to the point. It's not manipulative, it's not deceptive, it's not going behind the scenes, it's not trying to come through the back door, it's not trying to push something that the person doesn't need, like a lot of sales tactics or teenagers talking to parents. Sorry, guys. You guys ever manipulated your parents? My daughters are afraid to say yes. Now, we know the old classic, "Oh, Daddy, I love you. You're so handsome." I start here and there, I start reaching for the wallet so I can put it away. I'm just kidding. Okay, but look, this is a good point. This is a key. He said, for you and me, our heart, if we want to be wise, it'll tell us to watch the things that we say, and if we will do that, it will actually make us more persuasive rather than just being manipulative. A couple more things to share. Verse number 20, chapter 29, verse number 20, Solomon says, as a key to communication, we should be slow to speak, and we should guard our words carefully. Proverbs 29, verse 20. Do you see a man who is hasty in his words? There is more hope for a fool than for him. I want you to notice that the wisest man in the world has repeated something we've already said. Don't be in a hurry to talk. In fact, he says it over and over and over. In the book of James, James picks up the same refrain, be slow to speak, quick to hear. This is a wonderful truth. If you want to be a good communicator, we need to guard our mouth and be slow to speak. I can only imagine that this king, in his many years of service, in his many years of sitting on his throne in the throne room, probably heard a bunch of fools talk who thought they knew what they were talking about. Can you imagine being a court-appointed counselor in Solomon's throne room? You know, every king has their counselors, right? Can you imagine you're the court-appointed counselor? You're one of several wise men. You're one of several trusted advisors. And the king's sitting on his throne, and a situation comes up, and he looks over at you, and he says, what do you think? And I'm sitting there, and I'm thinking, now he's the smartest man in the world. He's the wisest man in the world. And he's asking me what I think. You know what I'm going to say? Whatever you think, sir. You know, I think you ought to go to your first gut instinct. Whatever is on your heart, that's, sir, I really think. What was it you said? You know, I think that's a good advice. But I'm sure he saw lots of fools who wanted to impress him with their supposed knowledge. They wanted to get there and impress him with their supposed wisdom. And they probably were orators, and they would make great speeches, and they would go on and on about this, that, and the other. And he's sitting there. You know what he's doing? He's taking notes. He's writing, I need to remind myself, after listening to this idiot talk for 35 minutes, I need to write a verse in there about not being hasty in what you say, because that's just foolishness. He says, do you see a man who is hasty? And look closely at that verse. There is more hope for a fool than for the one who is quick to speak. Did you know that once the words leave your lips, they can never come back? I have in my email box an email. It's marked urgent. It's in my inbox. And the subject is, it has the person's name, it says, so-and-so would like to recall this message. Now, there are some email systems that allow people that if the email has not been read by the sender, to actually, it goes out and pulls that message back. Because sometimes people press send a little too quickly, you know what I mean? And so I've got this email in my email box, and it's because it's marked urgent, it's at the very top of my email box. Even though it's a very old message, it's at the very top. And the subject says, it has their name, would like to recall this message. Now, why do I keep that there? To remind me that I can never take back something I've said. Because that person didn't recall that message. I read it before they got it back. It wasn't a bad message. It was a communication that was incomplete, and they wanted to be able to add more proper information to it later. It wasn't anything bad. But boy, I tell you what, there have been some people who've lost some jobs over some emails they've sent that they wish they could have recalled, over some voicemails they left they wish they hadn't left, over some memos that were sent out that they wish they hadn't sent out. I'm thinking about some different sportscasters over the years that have made comments on national television. They wish they could take those words back. So let's not be hasty. There's a verse I wanted to read to you, Proverbs 13:3. It says, the one who guards his mouth preserves his life. The one who opens wide his lips comes to ruin. So be slow to speak and guard your words carefully. Two more. Proverbs 12:18, we've read this, but I want to show you, I think this is a truth that we need to learn. Proverbs 12:18 says to us, there is one who speaks rashly like the thrusts of a sword, but the tongue of the wise brings healing. And this is the point I'm trying to make, that Solomon is trying to make, is never tear others down, but rather build them up. This is the kind of people we need to be, that our words build people up. Folks, it's so easy to say things that are cutting and hurtful, whether it's to their face or behind their back. That's where it's easiest, is behind their back. And I know we think everybody does it, but there is nothing innocent about cutting someone with a sword. I don't have my pocket knife in my pocket, and it's probably a good idea because I was thinking about reaching in my pocket knife and coming out there with my open blade and cutting somebody. That wouldn't have been innocent at all. No matter how innocent it may seem, it is our natural inclination to join in on the office gossip, or to someone starts talking about somebody and just to go ahead and add our little jab and our little two bits that we added to it. But Solomon urges us, and this is a very important word, listen to this, to choose. He urges us to choose to act contrary to the natural inclination, and to build up, not tear down. You know, I have experienced this. I have seen this. And you may have as well. But I have been in a situation, not like I gossip just as much as the, no, well, just as much. But I understand gossip because I have gossiped. And I do gossip from time to time. It comes natural and you find yourself running. But I have been in situations where someone begins talking about such and such. And the conversation is going, you know where the conversation is going downhill. And then you just interject, but you know, they really have a neat way of doing such and such. You just say something positive about them. You know, I know what you're saying, but I really like the way that they do this with their kids. Or I really like the way they serve in this area. I was really impressed when they did. And all of a sudden, that conversation starts going from here to here because the other person goes, you know, you're right. And I'll tell you something else. I was thinking about they this, this, and this. You know, we can turn those tides of conversation. We can change those directions. Instead of just piling on and piling on and piling on, why don't we, instead of thrusting with a sword and cutting and saying, let me tell you what I know, let me tell you what I know, we start to build up, start to build up, start to build up. It says there is one who speaks rashly like the thrust of a sword, but the tongue of the wise brings healing. You want to be a wise person? You get in that situation where everybody else is thrusting and everybody else is cutting, start speaking healing. Start speaking positive. Start speaking wholeness and life, and you'll help others. And so, never tear others down. Rather, build them up. The last one is this. It's pretty simple. Stop while you're ahead. When it comes to communication, we need to stop while we're ahead. Proverbs chapter number 10, verse number 19. I saved this one for last because it's time for me to stop. When there are many words, transgression is unavoidable. But he who restrains his lips is wise. Many people are like the Energizer Bunny when they start talking. They keep going and going and going and going and going. But the wise man says, he who restrains his lips is wise. It's important. I'm one of those who keeps going and going. But I know that the truth is, to be a good communicator, to use the tools and that God's given us in language properly, to be able to communicate his truth in life, we got to know when to stop. He warns us that if you keep talking after you've made your point, it's easy to get into foolishness. It's easy to trip up and say something foolish. And so we need to make our point, and we need to be quiet. Because Proverbs 17:28 says, even a fool, when he keeps his mouth shut, is considered wise. So what are we going to do? We're going to stop while we're ahead. Let me just run these down with you real quick. These are keys to communication. These are practical things that will help you. Number one, listen before speaking. Number two, speak in a way that makes others want to hear what you've got to say. Number three, learn to be persuasive. Not manipulative, but persuasive. Number four, be slow to speak and guard your words carefully. Number five, never tear others down. Rather, build them up. And number six, stop while you're ahead. And having said that, I'll stop. Lord, thank you for your word, and thank you for the truths that come to us through your word. We need practical help for living in this world. And I pray, Lord, that tonight you will have given us a key. We may not remember all six of these. We may not remember all four of the truths and all six of the keys, but I pray that we'll remember something that will help us in a situation, in a relationship, with our family, our employer, our coworkers, our children, wherever it is, that you'll help us to remember something from this message tonight, that we might be those who communicate truth, and that we might be like trees who give life. Help us to build up and not tear down with our words. I pray in Jesus' name. Amen.